your weekly appointment with Dr. Raymond Hamdan, clinical and forensic psychologist based at the Human Relations Institute. He's here to take your questions this morning. If you are seeking counsel, looking for some advice, support with some personal issues that you're facing, you can also tweet, actually, if you want to get involved with us on our website, DubaiEye1038.com, and on Twitter at Suzanne Radford. And we've been talking about missing persons. That's what we've started with today. And many different reasons why people may go missing. And, you know, in a lot of cases, when you look at around the world, at different countries, people are found. Now, one of the reasons somebody may go missing is because they're in debt and they are really struggling, and it feels very shameful and scary and desperate measures. And it could even be linked to a mental breakdown of some sort that makes somebody walk out the door and they're never seen again. Now, we are looking at what happens to the people that are left behind. But interesting here, the message is coming in. One person texting earlier saying that they had thought about disappearing many, many times whilst faced with debt, but they've held on in there and they're still fighting, even though it's a struggle, and they haven't disappeared. And they've come back and said, really on what you were saying, Dr. Raymond, creditors definitely understand if they see you have adjusted your lifestyle and are always available to take their calls, and that you're paying whenever you get a chance. And then someone else has texted in saying that they find it very difficult, actually, that it's not necessarily the case. If we're discussing finance as a reason for disappearing and being honest with the creditor, they're saying that they've had friends that have been honest and have asked if they could lower monthly payments and maybe, you know, with the contributions to paying off mortgages, but have found it very difficult, actually, with creditors. And, yeah, there's some complexities. So it's, I guess, down to the individual experience. And if you want to share your experience this morning, then do let us know. What do you do, Dr. Raymond, if you're trying your best and you are being honest and you are talking to your creditors and they're saying, I'm not interested.
There are going to be alternatives, and the alternatives are you can go to friends. You can actually go to your own government facility, which is the embassy or the consulate, and sometimes they can actually help. Now, they're not obliged to help, even though they're obliged to help you as a citizen. They may or may not intervene in these kinds of situations. Sometimes they will on a government level, actually. But it's unfortunate that there's not consistency. Not knowing the individual case of when things go sour or when things go good, I do know that more things will go good when people are open and honest about their situation, showing good faith, producing some kind of cash interest. So even though you may have a debt where you have to pay 2,000 dirham a month, if you show up with 1,000, or 500 sometimes, and say, I'm sorry, this is all I've got, they may be willing to accept that as a good faith gesture. Now, there are going to be situations where the creditor may not want to have any good faith gestures at all. They're just wanting their money back. And maybe they can afford not to get their money back and just make people's lives miserable by playing power games. Well, money is a good way to show power. Unfortunately, there are those people who do exist. I do know, however, from 22 years of experience here and working with people from different sectors of life, that the community here does tend to be more understanding than not understanding. When people go forward in good faith, and whoever the creditor is, or as this person's indicating that they had to go before the law enforcement system, when those people realize that you do have good intentions, they will express some sort of leniency. Like, for instance, I understand that sometimes passports can be held. And there could be a support passport to be held as well from a spouse or the corporation where you're working, so that these situations can be resolved. However, in not knowing this particular person's experience that they're referring to, I wouldn't be able to tell you why in that case it didn't work. But I do know that sometimes people are just not cooperative. They may have had a bad day and they had 10 people say, we're not able to pay back the debt, but we want to. Also, you have to remember that there are people in the world who tend to be somewhat narcissistic and arrogant, and they think by saying, I know you loaned me 10,000, but I can never pay you back, as if that's going to be good enough. And some of these narcissistic kind of personalities really believe that it's okay not to pay back just because now, see, I'm being honest with you. I cannot pay you back.
It lets you off the hook.
It doesn't work that way. The fact is, that kind of a personality disorder will certainly affect the rest of us who are good, decent, honorable citizens on this planet, whether we're living in our own country or someone else's country, and we don't want to have that kind of bad relations with anybody, nor do we want to default, nor do we want a situation where we'll never be trusted again. People are good people, basically. They want to be trusted, they want to be respected, and they want to also be able to give that in return.
So this message that's come in regarding safety and the perception of safety, it's a really interesting area, I think. They're saying that they believe that crime such as assault, murder, theft, abuse is on the increase. And they're not sure if the crime rate is increasing because there's more information about crime, or in fact, is this information being withheld? So that leads them on to reason that, does this mean that perhaps where we are living what we believe to be a safe place, that maybe we're being led into a bit of a false sense of security, in that although compared to other places in the world, it probably is a safer place, but does it mean that we think, oh, we're invincible, nothing bad will ever happen to us? And that's actually a very vulnerable place to put yourself.
We can never be so blind that we think that we are safe because we're just sitting in our living rooms watching bad things happen on television. But the fact is, no matter where you go, if you do know where not to go, you can stay pretty relatively safe. When that is said, that doesn't mean that bad people aren't going to do bad things. But should we actually believe that there are more bad people than good? I don't think so. I believe, actually, that the bad people are in a minority. They're the ones who get the news headlines, however, that makes it look like they're in the majority. Is there an increase in crime? Even if there is an increase in the number of crime, there's not an increase in the percentage. It's only because the population increases, the percentage stays the same. So with the increase in population, that percentage doesn't change, but the number of crimes does increase as well. So with media now, we're getting a lot more direct evidence of things that happen day to day, whether it's in print broadcast or it's in, if it's in print news or broadcast news. We're getting a lot more of this kind of information that's blown at us. How many times do we watch the news or read the news and it's good news? Wouldn't it be nice to have media that only did good news? That would be more realistic and represent the majority of the population on this planet.
Well, you know, that's an interesting one, Dr. Raymond. Some may beg to differ there. It's a good debate to have. But what I'm getting at is, and it may be that, I agree in the fact that I think most people are good, but, you know, I come from the UK where you wouldn't let your child go out of your sight if you're in a shopping mall. I'm looking at young children, you know, because of what we read, what we hear has happened to. But now here, I don't think that's the case. You know, we have a freer lifestyle in a way, in that we think it's quite safe, and I believe it is safer than the UK. But what I'm getting at is, and what I think this text message is getting at, is that luring us into a false sense of security? Because anywhere in the world, there's still going to be someone bad around a corner that might take your child, or something bad might happen to your family.
Even if you watch the movie Taken with Liam Neeson, you remember that his daughter and best friend at the age of 17 landed in a European country. All the people, the thousands of people that were at that airport, were not bad people. It happened to be one person who happened to be next to those two young girls was a bad person. That doesn't reflect on that airport, nor does it reflect on the population of the city where they landed, nor the country, or the continent for that matter. But it made for a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that certainly doesn't say that every time you let your 17-year-old daughter or son travel, that bad things are going to happen to them. We're not going to be making movies about every kid who travels.
Mm. Really, absolutely right. And but you still, as a parent, are going to ask yourself, how much do I let my give my child that independence? How much am I wanting to wrap them up in cotton wool and keep them safe, keep them close to me? Yeah, and whose responsibility is it at the end of the day to be safe? Is it just, you know what, just live your life, because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen? Or can we do something ourselves as parents, as friends, as individuals to take better care of our loved ones?
I'm a very liberal parent. My children can go anywhere in the world they want as long as their mother and I can go with them.